Well, could we turn, please, to Exodus chapter 22 and verse 21. I'm going to speak today on the subject of foreigners, of all things. One of those subjects that we meet scattered through the Bible, and of course we're not under the law of Moses. These instructions given here in Exodus are part of the law of Moses, so we're not under that, but it can show us the way God sees things, and it helps us to see what God requires of his people in their attitudes. So we're going to look at this subject of foreigners, because that's a very up-to-date subject in our country today. The Bible doesn't call them foreigners, sometimes it calls them aliens. Some versions will call them foreigners, but sometimes they're called aliens. We can't use that word these days, because people think of little green men that have come from outer space. In the old versions of the Bible, they are sometimes called strangers or sojourners. Anyway, whatever the expression, they are people who are not of the same ethnic group, the same nationality as the people to whom these words were written, the people of Israel. So what should be the attitude towards foreigners? Well, this was what God said to the Israelites in chapter 22 of Exodus, verse 21. You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Remember that you didn't like it when you were foreigners in another country, and if you didn't like it, then don't you make it difficult for other people. You didn't like being oppressed, so make sure you don't oppress others. Treat others the way you would like to be treated. In the book of Leviticus, I'll just read this to you, it says, when the stranger sojourns with you in your land, don't do him any wrong. The stranger who sojourns with you shall be to you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. Not only love your neighbor as yourself, love the foreigner as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So once again, God is reminding them of how they felt. And I can tell you that when I've lived in a foreign country, I've been in lots of countries, of course, but I'm thinking of where our family grew up. And, of course, we can understand the local language. And we could hear that the butt of many of the racist jokes are the Europeans, the foreigners, ourselves. We don't like it. It's not pleasant. And so that makes me now not want to crack racist jokes on other people. Makes you more sensitive. Don't do to others things that you don't like other people doing to you. Love your neighbour as yourself. We are, of course, in a sense, all strangers in God's world. We are all foreigners. That's a statement that's made in the book of Chronicles. I'll just read it to you. Don't turn to it. In fact, if you want to turn to the next reference, you can go across to Leviticus chapter 23. And while you're finding your way to Leviticus 23, I'll just read you this comment out of the book of Chronicles. For we are strangers before you, O God. We are sojourners as all our fathers were. Our days on the earth are like a shadow, and there is no abiding, nothing permanent. We are here as strangers, as foreigners, as visitors to God's earth. And that's something that we ought to remember. That is repeated in the Psalms in a couple of different ways, but we should remember that. This nationalism, somehow as if we own this country. We act as if we're gods. The whole world belongs to God. And it just happens to be that we were born in this country and other people were born in other countries. And we ought not to think that we can behave in a way that is basically making ourselves gods. It is God's world. And we are all just sojourners, we are strangers, we are foreigners who happen to live here for a while. There is no permanent residence for us. Yes, we went across to Leviticus chapter 23, verse 22. And here we find that when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field to its very border, nor shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Notice each time it says, I am the Lord your God. Just reminding us that he is the Supreme One, and all of us are here by his permission, inhabiting his earth. Now when you farm, he says, don't reap to the very border, don't go back and pick up the bits that drop after your reaping. Leave them all around so that disadvantaged people, such as the strangers, they will have some opportunity to come and eat. You can meet their needs in this way. Don't be hard-hearted. Even the distribution of tithes. If you read a section in the book of Deuteronomy, even there, the foreigners among them were recipients of some of this largesse, some of this generosity, as the tithes were distributed among the poor and other disadvantaged people. Even in the Ten Commandments, I didn't find this until a few weeks ago when I was preparing this talk, even in the Ten Commandments, foreigners get a mention. Yes, it's there in the commandment about the Sabbath rest. And it says, renew rest on the Sabbath day, give the same one day off to all your workers and to all the foreigners who are among you. Nice, generous spirit there. Let's go across to Deuteronomy chapter 24 for another reference. Chapter 24, verse 17. You shall not pervert the justice due to the foreigner or to the fatherless or take a widow's garment in pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore I command you to do this. Look what God has saved you from. Now other people are in a position of disadvantage. Don't you exploit them. Don't you pervert the justice that is due to them. Give them a fair go, the same as you have been given a fair go through being redeemed and given this land in which you're going to live. And so it goes on through the rest of the law of Moses. I could pick out many verses. They are repeated, of course. Some of those in Exodus are repeated in Deuteronomy. But we have the flavour. It's a consistent theme of how people are to be generous in their attitude towards foreigners. One of the problems is, of course, that foreigners look different. And we discriminate on the basis of how people look, or how they speak, or how they dress. If you came into the street where Gay and I live, you would see that there are 20 houses there, but in that street there are a lot of different ethnic groups represented. We have one house where the people are Vietnamese. We have a house next door to them where they are Filipino. And then across the road in the house next door to us, another lot of Filipinos. We have Germans. Opposite us, we have Malaysian Chinese. And further down the road, we have another house of Malaysian Chinese. We have Italians. We have Greeks. And if you came into the street and you saw this variety of people, you'd say, oh, you've got quite a lot of foreigners living here. Well, yes, we do have some foreigners in our street. But actually all those people we just mentioned are not foreigners. They are Australians. They may look different from some of the Anglo-Saxons, but they are Australians, and they've all got passports to prove it. But we do have some foreigners in our street. One of them is New Zealand, and one of them is British, and they also have passports to prove it. You see, we base our judgments on what people look like, and so the people who are foreigners don't at first look like it. Others, you're looking at them, you think they are. They're not. They're Australians the same as we are. Had an interesting story told to me when I was out in Western Queensland a few years ago. Somebody was talking about a person who referring to a man called Peter. And he said, I mean Peter the Aussie, not Peter the Chinese. Now it so happened that Peter the Chinese is an Australian. He was born here, and both his mother and father, who were Chinese, were born here. So Peter the Chinese was actually the Aussie, but Peter the Aussie was not Australian at all. He was an Irishman, and he also had a passport to prove it. So superficial, our judgments. Be fair, be even-handed. And a page over in the book of Deuteronomy, one of the curses that is given is, cursed is he who perverts the justice due to the stranger and the sojourner and the fatherless and the widow. These disadvantaged groups, if you pervert justice that's due to them, you are under the curse of God. So much for the references in the law of Moses. Now, as I said, we can just keep going. I'm going to flip over now to the end of the Old Testament. If you want to follow with me, find your way, please, to Malachi chapter 3, verse 5. It's one of those chapters where there are a few dire judgments pronounced on people. Malachi chapter 3, verse 5. This is talking about the judgment that God is going to send upon the people for various wrongdoings. Verse 5, I will draw near to you for judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, the adulterers, those who swear falsely, those who oppress the hireling of his wages, the widow, the orphan, all of those who are oppressed, and against those who thrust aside the sojourner and do not fear me, says the Lord. So those who are racist, they fall under the same judgment as adulterers, those who tell lies, those who are openly unjust and who are cruel to their workers, those who take advantage of widows and orphans and other people who had no means of support and who were open to attack by unscrupulous people. And here, among all of those, is a judgment announced upon those who discriminate against the foreigners among them. That sort of exploitation was reflected also in a verse I'm just going to read to you from the book of Ezekiel. Let me read this one to you. The people of the land have practiced extortion. These are some of the judgments upon the people who are under God's judgment. They've practiced extortion, they've committed robbery, they have oppressed the poor and the needy, and they've extorted from the stranger and the sojourner without redress. That is Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 29. You can see how seriously God treats this issue. Let us go across to Hebrews chapter 13. There are, of course, not the same sorts of instructions in the New Testament books as we've just read in the Law of Moses, because the New Testament is not giving us the code of law under which the people of Israel lived. Nevertheless, there is a mention of this subject in chapter 13 of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. The reference, I suppose, originally was to Abraham entertaining strangers, and without realizing it, he was entertaining angels. But the point is that here the people of God once again are exhorted to be hospitable, and not simply to be hospitable to those of their own set, people who look like them, people who share their relationships or their ethnic origins or whatever. They are to be hospitable to the strangers, to the foreigners, to the people they don't know. And that's one of the signs of a person who is pleasing God. We have that reflected in the book of Job, where Job, in recounting the things that he did, and I don't think that Job is telling lies here. We're not going to go into the story of Job. We know that he was rebuked by God because he wouldn't accept what God had sent to him. But he was an upright man. And the various good things he did, one of them was, he says, the stranger and the sojourner have not lodged in the street. I have opened my doors to the wayfarer. He has been generous in bringing in off the street those who nobody else wanted to welcome, because they were different. And because they weren't part of us, therefore, let's not bother about them. But Job went the extra. What was not really the practice of people round about him, Job did it. And we are to be the same. When we live in a country where there are all sorts of tensions that people stir up, normally they're stirred up for political ends, but a lot of us are fairly conservative at heart, and we don't like things changing. You see people walking around who obviously have come from the Middle East and they're dressed a different way, and other people who have come from China and places and they look different. And so it builds up a resentment within people. It ought not to be found within the people of God. In fact, there's a judgment again announced in the New Testament. As it was in the Old Testament, so it is in the New Testament, a judgment announced upon those who treat with injustice those who ought not to be treated like that. For example, the stranger. You know, in Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats, where Jesus is saying, you visited me when I was in prison, you clothed me when I was naked, you fed me when I was poor, and things of that nature. And then he says, others didn't do it. And they said, when didn't we do it? And he said, you didn't do it when you didn't do it to other people. What you didn't do to them is the same as if you didn't do it to me. That's the way I see it. I'm just trying to remember the quote there. Yes, I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. I was naked and you did not clothe me. He was a stranger and they didn't welcome him. Oh, when didn't we do that? He said, well, you didn't do it to these other people who are strangers. And if you didn't do it to them, then you didn't do it to me. Now, that ought to really set us back and make us think what our attitude is. We have a policy, or Gay has a policy, whenever she sees a woman who obviously is Muslim, you can tell by the particular garb that they have over their head, and she always makes a point of somehow being present to the person, maybe talking to them, going up, saying something, because those people move in isolation. Nobody quite understands them, they look different, we're not quite sure if they're going to produce a weapon or blow up a supermarket or something, and so they live in isolation. But here they are in our country. God has brought them to us. And do you know there are more Muslims being converted now than have ever been converted? The gospel couldn't be taken to them in some of the countries where they live. But God in His sovereignty has brought them into countries where the gospel is open. And now they're hearing for the first time and many are responding to it. I was in Sydney just recently and I found that there is now a third assembly of Islamic converts in Sydney. Maybe I'm overstating that. Not Islamic converts, let's say Arabic speaking, because they're not all converts. Some of them were Christians before they came here. When I was there a couple of years ago, I found that there originally had been one, and then there had been two Arabic speaking. One was mainly Egyptians and Jordanians, and the other was mainly Syrians and Lebanese. But now I find there's a third one, and they are mainly Iraqis. And these have been built up through converts. When I was in Sydney that time before, the man said, we have baptized 8 Muslim converts this year. They're living in the same part of town, they go to the same sorts of workplaces, and these Christians are speaking to them. And so we find that the church is growing. God is doing a wonderful thing among Muslim people around the world. But most people in this country are prejudiced against them. So I got off the track. I was starting to tell you about Gay. When she sees these people, she always goes up and says something to them, chit-chat. And she says, without exception, they respond so positively. They are so pleased that somebody speaks to them and, you know, treats them as just fellow citizens. She has only had one exception. It was an elderly lady whose English wasn't all that good, and she was a bit suspicious of who this person was, just coming up unannounced and starting to talk with her. But apart from that, Gay said, they respond so readily. Just last week, or a couple of weeks ago, we were in over there at Carindale, and we were just sitting down in that food court there and having something to eat, and you're at your table, and there's tables everywhere, and you grab something and sit down and eat it. And beside us, in the other table, was a Chinese woman by herself eating. And we'd finished, and we're just sort of cleaning up the mess, and then Gay just turned to her and said hello, and we just started talking with her. And we found that she had very little English. She was from mainland China. She has only arrived in Australia in the last few months, and she was completely bewildered. English was inadequate. She didn't know her way through the system. Her husband was at work. She was trying to find work, and so it goes on. And in no time, we built a bridge across, left each other's phone numbers and addresses. She didn't live all that far from our place, 4 or 5 kilometres, and so Gay will now follow her up. And we've done this with other people. In fact, we've seen converts in our church of Filipino migrants who didn't know their way through the system. And the kids come to playgroup, and then Gay starts to take her to some other place where she has to get treatment for her children, or to the social security section where they're not quite sure what to do. And in no time, you've won their confidence and they're so appreciative. And the end of that story, incidentally, is that those people became Christians. She and her husband, we baptized them. And then we had a second Filipino couple. But the sad part is, other people in the church didn't show the same generosity of spirit as we had shown. And in the end, they went to another church where there were already a group of Filipinos. And it broke our heart, really. Because other Christians in the church did not reach out to them. I've heard people criticize because we have these ethnic churches. They say, well, why can't they come to our church? Well, I preach in quite a lot of these ethnic churches. And I find in almost every case that they didn't start off to produce their own church. They all tried to work within the mainline churches, but they would bring their friends along, and then they would find there was a lack of communications or a lack of welcoming spirit. And so they went off and started their own, where they could bring their ethnic friends along, and all of those are growing. You know as well as I do that most of the Anglo-Saxon churches in this country are declining in numbers. But every ethnic group church that I know of is growing. Whether they're Spanish or Arabic or Chinese or Korean or Cambodia, they're all growing and they're multiplying. Not because they set out to be different, but because they didn't find a welcome where they were. And when they got their own thing going, people responded and they're all seeing converts. It just is so thrilling to go to some of these places. I preached this talk just a few weeks ago in another church. That's where I prepared it, and so I thought I'd pass it on this morning. But it was interesting at the end of that talk, one lady was not entirely happy with some of the things that I had said. Although she thought there were some good points in what the Bible said, she made the comment to me, but I think when they come here, they ought to learn our language and they ought to dress as we do. And I was so discouraged because she obviously had not heard a word that I had said. Or better still, she had not heard a word that the Bible had said. Because there was not a word in all of those references I made, or any of the references I've read this morning, not a word in there about what the foreigners should do. These are all comments that are addressed to the people of God to tell the people of God what they should do. That's what it's been about this morning, and that was what it was when I preached this sermon in the other place a few weeks ago. All telling the people of God how they should respond to the foreigners. But you see, people make excuses, and then they shift the blame onto the foreigner for some reason or other. So that means that I now don't have to do what the Bible tells me to do. Look, what we've been looking at this morning is not addressed to the foreigners. It's addressed to us. What should we do? How should we respond to this situation? After speaking with this woman, I went home to somebody else's place, and I drove a lady to her house. As we were driving along in the car, I didn't bring the subject up, but she brought it up and she said, "Well, you gave us something to think about this morning." She said, "You know, you never think about that sort of thing. I've never thought of what the Bible says about foreigners and all these ethnic groups that we have scattered around the place." But she said, "They are sometimes, they don't fit in very well, do they, sometimes? She said, "Where I used to live before, we were in a block of units, and there were some Kosovar refugees, people from Kosovo, former Yugoslavia. And she said, they would sit on the wall and they would eat peanuts and drop all their shells all over the floor, and then they'd just walk away and leave them. We'd have to go up and sweep up after them, the mess they'd left out in the driveway." And she said, "Their kids, they ride these little bikes and tricycles and things around, and you've got to be very careful when you back your car out because you just back into them." And she said, "Quite often they just leave them lying there." And she said, "If you're not careful, even though there are no children around, the next thing, you can run over somebody's bike. And then they have visitors, and when the visitors come, they park their cars higgledy-piggledy, and we have great difficulty getting in and out of our driveway." So I listened to this, and I said, "Yes, well," I said, "in our street, we sometimes have the same problem." She said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, there you go, you see, they come here, and that's what happens." "Oh, yes," but I said, "in our street, the problem was not with the Vietnamese, or the Filipinos, or the Italians, or the Greeks, or the Chinese, or the Malaysians. The problem was with an Anglo-Saxon family that looks exactly the same as you and me. And they do all those things that you've just said. They have a bird cage, and when the birds eat the seed, they drop the shells off, the wind blows the stuff across onto the washing of the lady just across the fence, and that's quite a nuisance. And," I said, "they also are driving the little bikes and trikes around the place. You have to be careful you don't skittle them when you bring the car out. And then they leave them lying in the middle of the road, so you have to be careful. And they have the problem of visitors coming and parking higgledy-piggledy. But you see, when it's one of us, so to speak, we don't say, 'Oh yes, they were ordinary Aussies that did that.' We just say, 'Oh, our neighbours were no good.' But as soon as they happen to be Chinese or Middle Eastern or something, we say, 'Oh yeah, these Chinese are like this, or these Vietnamese are something else.'" Ethnicity doesn't enter the argument when we're talking about ourselves. But as soon as there's somebody else, we blame the ethnicity, as if that is the cause of the problem. Most of the problems in our society are caused by Australians, the same as you and me. But we don't say that. But as soon as they happen to be Croatian, or Fijian, or Samoan, or whatever, then we say, "Ah, yes, you see, the Samoans." It doesn't only happen here. It happens in just about every country of the world. When I was in Thailand, the same thing. Most of the crimes that are committed there are committed by Thais. But if it happens to be a European, or happens to be an Indian, or somebody that does something that's loud and clear in the denunciation of the wrongdoing, or in religion. In Bangkok, 98-99% of all the people are Buddhists. And of course the government's corrupt, and there's all sorts of violence and rapes and disorder and breaking and enterings and everything going on. But they don't say, "Oh, these are Buddhists doing this, and these government officials are all Buddhists, and these politicians are Buddhists, and all these people who rape the innocent, these are Buddhists." But as soon as it happens to be a Muslim or a Christian that's involved in some misdemeanor, that will be right in the headlines. Muslim does this, Christian does that. It's universal, this problem. We had a fellow once that got converted, came into the church. He'd come from a pretty rough background, and we were trying to help him. And one of the things we were able to do was to get him some employment. She was a bit of a rough character, the woman he worked for. But anyway, he toughed it out there for a few weeks. And one day I dropped around, for some reason I just called in, and this woman, she was angry. She said, "This fellow here, he had apparently abused her. He'd called her some rude name, and that had a good sized argument. And she said, 'You call him a Christian, and that's the way he behaves.' I said, 'Oh, that's nothing.' I said, 'You should have seen him when he was a Buddhist.' Oh," and she looked like this at me, as if I'd fallen off the moon or something. It had never occurred to her, you see. All the other people are doing these things, but as soon as it was wrong, you say, but he was a Christian, or he was something different. And so we have that problem here, as I've just said. The rest of us do things, nothing said. It's just a neighbour, or this fellow I work with. Some people play loud music. Oh, some of these people get on your nerves. But as soon as it's first of another nationality, you say, well, see, the Vietnamese, that's what they're like. Okay, these things ought not to be, brethren. And we ought to take notice of some of the things we've heard this morning, not just the anecdotes that I've given you, but especially the Word of God. It's telling us some things that I think we need to take notice of. How we, as Christians, as God's people, ought to behave towards the foreigners in our community.